You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It's always great to play that inevitable game of catch-up at the end of the week. It's May 22nd, and we're about to celebrate Memorial Day weekend. And to all the veterans out there, certainly we thank you for your incredible service. And we must obviously remember the sacrifices of our men and women in uniform ever since the founding of this great nation. It's remarkable how so many politicians are quick to make the speeches, but with the exception of those who themselves have served, how many of these folks are quick to send our young men and women into harm's way without giving thought to what their decisions will really mean for the safety and well-being of our country. We need to remind them. You know, my area of expertise, of course, is immigration, and those of you who are familiar with me, familiar with the program, know that what I try to do is give you my perspective of what is happening through the prism of immigration, national security, law enforcement, having spent 30 years of my adult life as a federal immigration agent. I worked for the INS for some 30 years, and ever since 9/11, I've been out here doing what I'm doing. Whether it's being on this radio program, being a guest on other shows, I was on Newsmax TV last night with J.D. Hayworth. I love being on with J.D., and we'll talk a little bit about that program. But, you know, it's about bringing some semblance of sanity and truthfulness to the discussion, and neither side of the political aisle is willing to do that. I've come to give two names now to our political parties. They are the Democrats and the repugnant cans, because, goodness, it is repugnant to do what they're doing. They're carrying on like a bunch of demons. Forgive me, I have a little frog in my throat this evening. You know, the craziness is that by not enforcing our immigration laws and by proposing crazy amnesty programs, and now we've got an administration promulgating policies that contradict the law, and apparently at a hearing it was revealed that the president does in fact expect, and the chain of command does in fact expect, immigration agents to violate the law as long as they follow the edicts of this president. This is lunacy. It's unconstitutional. It's unlawful. And I have never, in my experience with immigration or any other laws, and I go back to 71, that's almost 43 years ago that I first got that badge, I've never heard of a situation like this. We are a nation of law. And it's bad enough that we have politicians who don't want the laws enforced. We actually now have an administration telling the agents, apparently, to work opposite the law. This has never been done before, and it shouldn't be done. You know, our borders, our immigration laws are America's first and last line of defense against international criminals, international terrorists, against those people who, if they came here, would have an adverse impact on the United States. And I've been writing about it, and in fact, as a reminder, the websites I would love for you to visit, my own personal website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.com. Californians for Population Stabilization. They just posted my most recent article Bin Laden, the 9/11 Commission report, and immigration. And it's an important report. And we're going to talk about that report and that piece I wrote momentarily. Pardon me. I also write for Front Page Magazine, for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I'm working on a major article for The Social Contract. You know, our immigration laws have absolutely nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. And in fact, when I debated this guy Aguilar yesterday on J.D. Hayworth's program that airs on Newsmax TV, 8 o'clock East Coast time, apparently now they're using the excuse, the open borders crowd, the immigration anarchists, if you will, that this is about conservatives stepping up to the plate. And since we can't trust Obama, who can, then we have to wait till 2017. But we're going to start out by putting up a double wall fence on the border where it needs to be put. We're going to make E-Verify mandatory. And we're going to, you know, all these little, we're going to have a registry to make sure we know whether or not people leave the United States. Folks, we don't need to know whether or not we don't need to know if aliens leave when they're supposed to, if they're here on non-immigrant temporary visas. We need to be in the position to do something about it. You know, it makes no sense to have a 9/11 system where you can call in and say there's a building on fire, or someone had a heart attack, send an ambulance, and have a wonderful communication system if, when those events happen, nothing can be done about it. So we have what? Exquisite records with great detail about who overstayed? We need to have boots on the ground. We need to have the resources to enforce the law. We need the political will. And now, politician after politician, we need to modernize the immigration laws. Modernize what? The laws are fine with minor exceptions here and there that we'll talk about, but essentially the fundamental principles of those laws are perfect. It's about keeping out aliens, not based on race, not based on religion, not based on any of those factors, because that would be totally outrageous and immoral as well as illegal, but based on aliens with dangerous communicable diseases or severe mental illness who are violent or sex offenders, among the other categories of aliens under the law to be kept out. Aliens who have committed heinous crimes, murder, rape, arson, drug trafficking, gun running, bank robbery, convicted felons, human rights violators, war criminals, spies, fugitives, and terrorists. That's what's in the law. What in the world is wrong with enforcing the laws? You've got an administration turning criminals loose on American streets across the country, and somehow this is acceptable. People are dying here in the United States as a direct consequence of the failures of the immigration laws to be enforced. This isn't hyperbole. It's not conjecture. We see it time and time again. The link between narcotics and crime. If you want to go after violent crime, this notion that we're going to count how many bullets law-abiding citizens who have firearms can put in their guns is ridiculous. The bigger issue is get the drugs off the street. Get the gangs off the street. Keep the guns from the bad guys. That I agree with 100%. I was an agent. I took guns off the street. I work with the ATF. And I know there are conservative friends of mine who might disagree with some of this. And that's cool. We're Americans. And that's the other issue that we really need to think about. We can disagree with each other without making enemies of each other. It's in the First Amendment. The right for peaceable assemblage is part of the First Amendment, along with freedom of press, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and the right to seek redress of grievances. And boy, do I have a list, and so do you, I'm sure. But when we get to the point where we've gotten where if you disagree with somebody, you become vilified and the enemy, that's un-American. Americans have always prided themselves in this ability to sit down over a cup of coffee, a cold beer, a barbecue, or anywhere, and be respectful toward one another and have the disagreements discussed honestly, openly, because nobody gets it right all the time, and nobody gets it wrong all the time. You know, that's the premise to our democratic process. Have the discussions, have the arguments if need be, do it respectfully, but goodness gracious, what we're supposed to do is have that conversation. And we've now gotten to the point where we've never been more polarized. You see the riots that are going on, and it's all about the evil police. I mean, it's disgusting. And the result of it is that the cops are pulling back in towns like Baltimore, and you can't blame them. When police, law enforcement use excessive force, there need to be consequences. That's no different from a doctor who is guilty of malpractice. It's no different from a judge who does things on the bench that are illegal. We're accountable. Every profession is. I wish we could make the politicians half as accountable as we make law enforcement. You know, you look at the riots in Baltimore, and it broke my heart. My mom lived in Baltimore for a number of years when she first came to America. I had family in Baltimore. It used to be my favorite road trip. I'd get up in the wee small hours of the morning with my mom and dad, and we'd hop on the Jersey Turnpike and head south to Baltimore. It was a big event. In fact, I remember going there before the Turnpike was entirely completed. So, you know, Baltimore is a part of my family history. And to see the riots and the devastation and the damage. But as bad as those riots were, and they were very visible, the riots were being done by looters and people that were frustrated. And God knows, and we're not going to get into all the motivation for all the sociopathic insanity that we bore witness to. But look at what's going on in Washington. If you want to talk about looting, the riots of Baltimore were small change. Small change. American middle-class families are losing their income, losing their ability to support themselves. And just about every politician so far who has announced that he or she is running for the office of president keeps talking about passing comprehensive immigration reform and more work visas for foreign workers. The lunacy of it is beyond anything I can begin to comprehend. How people aren't taking to the streets and screaming and demonstrating is beyond anything I could begin to comprehend. We have 93 million Americans underemployed or underemployed who are working age. The statistics are mind-boggling. Stuart Varney was on Fox News the other day, and he was talking about how we're spending over $100 billion a year. I think it was $100 billion a year, some ridiculous number, paying for food stamps and food subsidies. I mean, this is incredible stuff. So, you know, you look at that and you look at the fact that, according to what Varney had to say, and I'll take him at his word, 109 million Americans are getting some kind of money to help pay their food bill. Their food bill, folks, this is America. And, you know, what galls me are the folks that will sit there and say, well, this is because we have a bunch of lazy Americans. Why work when you get food stamps? And usually the people making those statements are not eating at McDonald's or White Castle. Nothing, there's nothing wrong with those establishments. I can't think of how many lunches I've had in those fast food restaurants. But my point is they're sitting down to prime beef, they're sitting down to lobster and all sorts of good stuff, and good for them. I have no problem with that. But to waggle a finger at Americans who were working hard for decades and lost their jobs through no fault of their own and now out of desperation are getting assistance, and you dare look at those people and look down your nose at them and criticize them, it's the mega wealthy who's created that problem. The mega wealthy who want to bring in more foreign workers, and they're claiming, well, the U.S. schools aren't capable of turning out the engineers, the scientists, the STEM workers, if you will, that America so desperately needs. That's a lie. There's over 1 million foreign students studying in the United States right now, over 1 million. And what's so amazing is that the number one country to send us their students is China. China. I want you to think about it. China sends us their students. China provides America with some of the professors. And very often, not always, this isn't about, you know, painting with that big a brush, but look at all the espionage that's going on in the United States. And we don't hear about that. This is all about the Latino voter. I did not know that Chinese were Latino. I mean, this is crazy stuff. And what people in the Latino community, many do understand and some don't, is they're being vilified. Because if you ask the average American, what does an illegal alien look like? What's the likely name for an illegal alien? They'll say, well, it's probably Pedro or Juan or Antonio. He's probably from Mexico. well, you know, Mexico does send us more illegal aliens, and they do send them. They encourage them to come here than any other country. But I can tell you that it's estimated that 40% of the illegal aliens did not run the border. That means they're not probably from Latin America. They were lawfully admitted and went missing. And when you look at the fact that the number one country whose immigrants are coming here now, we get more legal immigrants from China than any other country on the planet. So we keep hearing about the Latino vote, and we keep hearing about all this nonsense. And what is not being told by the media is that this isn't about Latinos. It's not about Latin America. It's slanderous. It's a disgusting form of profiling. And if you want to look at the damage being done, we are educating people who may well want to do us in. China, by the way, we're not certainly about to go to war with them, but I don't know what the crystal ball holds for tomorrow or next year or the year after. China has just warned off our ships from an area in the South China Sea where they are building an island. Believe it or not, the Chinese are building an island by dredging the bottom of the ocean and taking all that sand and creating an artificial island. Now, when American vessels got too close, they were warned on the radio. Airplanes were told that you're over Chinese territory and you need to turn back. Of course, our pilots did not turn back. Nothing happened so far. But understand that 60 Minutes did a report just a couple of weeks ago about how China has developed the ability to shoot down satellites, and so did we. China shot down one of their own satellites, and then 60 Minutes went on and made the point that China is developing missiles that can take out satellites that are orbiting above where we position our GPS satellites. I don't know if you know this, but the GPS in your car and your telephone, those devices all depend on satellites that are orbiting the Earth. And it's by measuring the slight differences in the time signal, how long it takes the signal to get back and forth, and which satellite, that the satellite is able to tell you where you are. But beyond the civilian use, this was really an outgrowth, the civilian use, from the military program. Because when you hear about smart munitions, smart bombs, what guides those weapons are GPS satellites. So if China takes out those satellites, it would cripple our military, and we'd be flying blind, literally. Now, apparently China's working on missiles that can take out satellites that are in geosynchronous orbits. And I know this is maybe a little bit esoteric for folks not familiar with science or whatever. I was going to be an engineer way back when, and one of my boys is an engineer. My youngest is studying engineering. But if you can put up a satellite, Arthur C. Clarke, the science fiction writer, actually had the first idea about it, that if you could put a satellite in the proper orbit above the Earth, it would seem to stay in still above that part of the Earth, because the higher you go, the less gravity pulls, so the speed of the orbit becomes lower, the distance you're traveling becomes greater. Close to the Earth, the satellite has to move at 17,000 miles, I think it's 17,500 miles an hour. The moon in orbit around the Earth only moves a little bit more than 2,000 miles an hour. So somewhere between those two extremes, we have a geosynchronous orbit that works out to just over 22,000 miles up. If you can put a satellite there, you can park it above a stationary spot on the equator. And we have communication satellites there. You see people, those little satellite dish, DirecTV, what they're doing is picking up a signal from a satellite that's 22,000 miles up. China is working on the technology to be able to take those satellites down. This is serious stuff. And I can assure you that some of the engineers and technicians and all these folks in China working on those programs that pose a threat to us acquired their education in the United States. That's how serious this is. We talk about nuclear nonproliferation on the one hand, but on the other hand, we're teaching nuclear physics and engineering to people from the Middle East. What could possibly go wrong? So now there was a story today that the chairman of Temple University's physics department was just arrested and charged with stealing secrets that would have been useful to the military. He is apparently now the seventh person involved. Pardon me. He was involved with this company that was working on devices that have military value, And the research into these devices was funded by DARPA, the Defense Administration's research arm. They do the research and development for the military. And one of the things that the Chinese, and I guess the Russians have done this, is they get their people to work in a company that does military contract work, but if they steal the secret before the military gives it a classification, it might be industrial espionage, but it does not rise to the level of actual espionage. So what that means is that there's probably going to be no jail sentence. They might be fined, or they just might be deported from the United States, you know, plead guilty to some offense and leave. So that's what's going on. We have people from foreign countries stealing our secrets. If you look at the Chinese aircraft, their fighter planes look remarkably similar to ours, some of them, especially their stealth aircraft. And we're teaching them how to build them. But nobody talks about that. All that we keep hearing is we need to bring in the world's best and brightest. Folks, the word for the world's best and brightest is American. American. And we're hearing this propaganda from both sides of the aisle because they have bought in, or people have bought into them perhaps, pushing this comprehensive reform, which unbeknownst to so many Americans, would greatly increase the number of H-1B visas. So for campaign contributions, they're selling out America. Everybody is concerned about Hillary Clinton and who gave her money and what decisions she made at State Department, and these are all valid questions. But I'd like to know how many politicians have taken money from people that are interacting with China and other countries also. So maybe it may not be as obvious where the money is coming from, but it is. It's coming from companies that want the cheap labor, companies that are involved with a whole bunch of issues, and very foolishly, we have companies building their facilities in China. And the Chinese have a terrible track record in terms of reverse engineering products, not recognizing or respecting intellectual property rights. And the consequence is significant. It's not only that perhaps someday China will build better computers, but that one day China will build a missile that will take down our satellites. They're building their nuclear fleet. How many of the engineers and scientists that are working on that nuclear fleet were educated by our people in the United States? This is the level of duplicity we're experiencing. I believe it was Lenin who said that the capitalists will sell you the rope with which you will hang them. Well, we're having a fire sale on rope right now, and it's deplorable, and nobody seems to be talking about it. You're not going to hear it on the major news networks. What you keep hearing is the same drum being beaten that we need comprehensive reform. When I debated this guy yesterday, it was the same old nonsense. Well, we'll first put up the fence, and then we'll have mandatory e-verify. But at the end of the day, let's give everybody who's here lawful status. And he said this is the conservative answer. It's not conservative. The issue isn't a conservative or a liberal issue. This is an American issue. You think about this. When was the last time that you saw a nexus on television, I don't care which network, between immigration and national security, immigration and the unemployment rates, immigration and the remittances being wired out of the country? You know, if you could stop the flow of money being sent home by foreign workers that amounts to somewhere between $125 and $200 billion, the UN used to post the exact amounts. They don't anymore because they know that people such as myself are going to those websites and doing the research. Because the UN wants that money to leave America, because if it leaves America, it goes to the third world. And with all the corruption of the third world and the corruption of our country, the money will vanish somewhere along the way and lots of people will get very wealthy. Believe me, it doesn't help anybody. But if you look at the remittances and you look at the multiplier effect that says that every dollar put into the economy generates three more dollars of business, well, every dollar taken out takes three more dollars out of the economy. So let's go with the low figure, $125 billion. Multiply that by three, you wind up with $375 billion. The national debt is growing at roughly a half trillion dollars a year. Right there, you almost have the growth of the national debt. And that's without looking at wage suppression of American workers. That's without looking at the increasing number of American workers who lose their jobs, lose their homes, go from being tax-paying middle-class consumers to people living below the poverty line with no disposable income, who will come to rely on the safety net programs, which further adds to the debt of the United States, to the deficit. We're losing every which way by open borders. The only winners here, the only winners are America's enemies and the fat cats who don't care about what happens to our country because they're too stupid and too greedy to understand that if you destroy America, waiting in the wings are China, Russia, and Iran. What could possibly go wrong? That's the magnitude of the threat we're facing. But you're not going to hear that on TV. I don't care what channel you listen to. I have yet to listen to a channel with the exception of One American News Network, and I'm on with folks like Graham Ledger. I love being on with Graham, J.D. Hayworth. They allow me the freedom to say these things. The other networks don't want to talk about it. What you're going to hear about is how comprehensive immigration reform would get the economy moving. Nuts. It's absolutely nuts. That's like saying that if you have too many passengers for an airline or they've oversold the airplane, the solution is to get more passengers. Would that make sense to anybody? You don't bring sand to the beach. When there's a hole in your boat, you don't drill more holes. And when you have a shortage of workers, a shortage of jobs, rather, the solution isn't to bring in more workers for the jobs you don't have. This is crazy. And the lie that I had to listen to when I was on TV yesterday from this guy I was debating was, well, all those foreign workers will generate jobs. How? How is the guy that's working in an office going to generate jobs? He's going to go out for breakfast, so we'll hire a couple of more waiters and a couple of more dishwashers, and we're going to take the guy that used to work there. Maybe we can look at Disney and how they've just fired a bunch of their IT people. Maybe we could look at Edison Power in California, that they just laid off their IT people to replace them with workers from India. How does that generate new jobs? Not for Americans, not good for our economy. And look at how important immigration is, because what I really want to also talk about tonight are the documents that, at least so far, have been made available from the raid at bin Laden's compound back in May of 2011. Among the documents that were seized were the 9/11 Commission report. I'd love to know how many members of our Congress have read that report. I'd love to know how many mayors have read that report. I'd love to know how many governors. I'd like to know if Mr. Obama himself read that report. Or perhaps the head of Homeland Security, Jay Johnson. I wonder if Jay read it. Hey, Jay, if you're listening, did you read that report? Because if you read the report, you would know that what you are doing runs contrary, 180 degrees opposite the 9/11 report. But you know what? Bin Laden had that report on his bookshelf. He had a couple of Congressional Research Service reports, and they didn't disclose what reports. I'd love to know. But here's the real chilling one. According to reports, Bin Laden had an application for U.S. citizenship on that on his bookshelf. Think about that. An application for citizenship. You see, he was a sociopath, crazy man. He was many things, but not stupid. Not stupid. Never underestimate your enemy. He studied engineering. He wasn't stupid. He was twisted. He was barbaric. He was scum, but stupid. So he's sitting there in his bunker, or whatever the hell you want to call that hole in the thing, and what did he have there? An application. You have to understand what the 9/11 Commission had to say about the true significance of those documents, of being able to become a citizen or get a green card or get an immigration benefit. The 9/11 Commission was so crystal clear, because what the 9/11 Commission talked about was that this was the best method for the terrorists to enter and embed themselves in our country. Embedding meaning hiding in plain sight. And here we are, Bin Laden's hideaway, application for U.S. citizenship. Maybe it was a coincidence, but I doubt it. I don't think that he picked it up lying in the street of Pakistan. I don't think so. He was probably looking at it as part of a strategy as to how do you embed people in the United States. And so that's why it should concern everybody. But I can tell you that I have testified before congressional hearings where I had members of Congress insist, believe it or not, that immigration had nothing to do with terrorism. Can you imagine a statement that's dumber than that? Immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. And you know, what's so ironic was I just wrote an article for Front Page Magazine, and I called it "Terrorists Value U.S. Citizenship More Than Our Politicians Do." And that's before. That was before I saw the article about what they found at Bin Laden's compound. We had incident after incident of naturalized citizens committing crimes. And so when you look at that, you realize that citizenship opens the doors to everybody. On February 24th, 2015, Progressives for Immigration Reform posted my article, "The Immigration Factor, Naturalized U.S. Citizen Added to the FBI's Most Wanted Terrorist List." Now, here's the story. Let me read this to you. Liban Haji Muhammad, a naturalized U.S. citizen born in Somalia, has been named to the FBI's list of most wanted terrorists, and a reward of up to $50,000 is being offered for information leading to his arrest and conviction. Muhammad is charged with providing material support and resources to Al-Qaeda and Al-Shabaab, a Somali-based terrorist organization. Now, by the way, what I'm reading to you is from the FBI press release. This isn't from some supermarket tabloid. Traveling with his U.S. passport, Muhammad is thought to have left the United States on or about July 5, 2012. Before his departure, the 29-year-old lived in Northern Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C., where he worked as a cab driver. It is important for us to locate Muhammad because he has knowledge of the Washington, D.C. area's infrastructure, such as shopping areas, metro airports, and government buildings. This makes him an asset to his terrorist associates who might plot attacks on U.S. soil. The FBI got it. But remember, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. If he couldn't have come here, ladies and gentlemen, he wouldn't be in that position. But he did come here, and we gave him citizenship. And there's others. Here's another story. This is a story about a guy by the name of Wissam Alush, a former translator for the U.S. military in the Middle East. So here's how a newspaper, My San Antonio, starts out. This is an excerpt, actually. Alush was arrested by the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force here last week after being indicted on charges of not disclosing during his quest to obtain U.S. citizenship his membership in the Amal militia and Hezbollah in Lebanon in the 1980s. He's also charged with not disclosing his prior membership in those groups when he applied for a security clearance with the Defense Department as he sought a contracting job. He wanted to become part of the military. Think of Nidal Hassan, the psychologist, Major Hassan, who killed how many people at Fort Hood? I mean, doesn't anybody pay attention? Doesn't anybody listen? And the article goes on and says, before 2009, Alush worked for L3 Communications, which provides linguistic services for the U.S. military, and he was deployed for several months to Iraq. He has lived in the U.S. since 2002 and once owned Windcrest Mobile, a gas station at Walsham Road and Interstate 35, his lawyer said. Well, let me tell you what. And again, this is total speculation, and let's remember, he has not been convicted of anything right now. These are allegations. They become facts when he's convicted, presumption of innocence. That's the beauty of our justice system. But let's just play the what-if game, and let's say it's not him. Owning a gas station could be very innocuous. I've known people to own gas stations. They're nice people. They render us an important service, unless you have a car that's battery-powered. Gas stations are, you know, great businesses to own and operate. But he was right on an interstate. what better way would you have people zoom in and zoom out so you could have clandestine meetings with people and nobody would be the wiser? Think about that. You would normally be meeting how many people during the course of a day? So even if you did surveillance, the guy walks in, the guy pays for his gas, he walks out. How in the world would you know whether or not the guy slipped him a memory card from a computer, a piece of paper, whatever, an envelope? You'd have no way of knowing. It's the perfect job if you wanted to evade surveillance and have what you would call in espionage a brush contact. The guy comes in, 2 seconds, he hands you, you hand him. You could wrap things up in money and hand the guy money for the thing. And you understand the point that we're dealing with. The potential is that could have furthered his efforts if he was involved with terrorism. If he's not involved with terrorism, then it's just a good plot for a movie. But think about how critical it was that of all the jobs he could have had, he was involved with translation. Translators get to see sensitive documents. Translators get to know who the agents are because they work with them. They become your eyes, your ears, and your mouth. They hear what's being said. They know who you're talking to. They know who the targets of investigations are. They know who's being cultivated as an informant. They're also in the position to mislead. If, let's say, you're dealing with an informant who's giving you good information and the translator doesn't want the military to know where there's weapons, all he does is change what he's being told, changes the question, changes the answer. You have no way of knowing. You know, when the U.S. Embassy was overrun in Tehran back in the late 70s under Jimmy Carter's astute leadership, God help us all, although compared to what we have now, I guess I could almost be nostalgic for the peanut farmer. But, you know, it was infuriating to me because under Carter, we were dead in the water. We were dead in the water. But under Carter, when the embassy was overrun, we were supposed to go look for these Iranians. And at one point, there was a massive demonstration, the near riot in Washington, D.C., and we had to process the Iranian students that were involved in this massive demonstration. And we were charged with going to the local jail in Lower Manhattan, the federal lockup, the Metropolitan Correction Center, and the men were sent up to Otisville. So one of my bosses, the late Vinny Ash, great guy, took a team of agents up to Otisville. I was one of the agents assigned to interview these women from Iran. And the Washington police, the Capitol Police, had prepared paperwork for each of the women that were taken into custody. So we all had the files, and we had fingerprints and photographs and supposedly biographical information. And I don't speak Farsi, but they did. And so when I would call their names, everybody started giggling. Well, we eventually found out why they were laughing, because instead of giving us their names, they used the names of body parts instead of their own names. Think about that. So, you know, imagine you're calling Miss Armpit, you know, Miss Buttocks. Everybody would laugh. They'd say, "Who are you calling?" Well, that was what happened in the case of these women. They had given, instead of their actual names, body parts and curse words. So we had no idea, and I'm asking this woman, "Is your name so-and-so?" Because it was written out phonetically. And she started giggling, and she finally admitted, "That's not really my name, and that's not a very nice word." And I was just sitting there with my mouth hanging open, and I'll never forget it. We all were. We looked at each other, and we said, "Wow, what a disaster." Now, did they do it? Did the translators that they brought with them? I have no idea how it happened. But you have to understand the significance. You have no idea who you're talking to or what they're saying. They may not know what you're saying. If that go-between, the translator, isn't neutral, doesn't do a faithful job of translating. So here we have this guy, Alush, translator, and there we go. We just had another translator get arrested, again, for his involvement with ISIS. You know, somebody once said that if you really want to spy on an agency, put them in the file room, don't put them in a key job. I would argue that being a translator might even be a better place to be put, because now you get to see the people. You get to see the sources. You get to hear the interrogations. And by listening to the interrogation, you also know what information we are considering to be significant. Imagine a translator and the damage that that translator can do, can identify people who cooperate. That guy might walk out of your building and wind up getting run down by a bus. His family might disappear. Why? Because you have a translator who's dirty. Not far-fetched at all, folks. And so now we have people saying, let's put illegal aliens in the military. They actually tried to do that with the funding bill for the military. What could possibly go wrong? We will take illegal aliens whose true identities, backgrounds, maybe even their countries of citizenship can't be verified, and we will put them in the military. We will teach them how to use weapons. We will give them access to sensitive installations, and then we will put a cherry on top and give them citizenship. How wonderful. How wonderful. How stupid. How incredibly naive. Look, we've probably had some wonderful illegal aliens serving with great distinction in the military. No doubt some have paid the ultimate price. No doubt some have been grievously injured. And this is not about being xenophobic. It's the uncertainty of dealing with people whose identities cannot be verified that keeps me awake at night. You know, I was on a radio program a number of years ago at Hofstra University out here in New York on Long Island. This young man called into the program, and I was sitting in the studio on campus. And he said, Mr. Cutler, why are you so fixated about poor people who run the border? It almost sounds like a discussion I had with a producer from 60 Minutes, who was behind the Leslie Stahl interview of Jay Johnson. You know, I'm just this cynical, mistrusting grump. And he said to me, what's the big deal? We're dealing with people that are just trying to better their lives. They're hungry. They're starving. We want to be nice to them. I said, look, I understand that. I understand that. My mom came here legally as a 14-year-old ahead of the Holocaust. I understand your concerns. And certainly it is, you know, something that's always in the back of your head, you know, what's going on with this guy's life that he's here that way. But I want to always, always, always err on the side of compassion for Americans. See, somehow, in the twisted world that we live in today, compassion is supposed to be extended to people who shouldn't be in the country. But nobody ever talks about compassion that we should be extending to our fellow Americans. We shouldn't be talking about compassion for America's blacks who live in the inner city, American Latinos who are living in the inner city, where violence is as routine as sunshine or a rainstorm. You know, how many American kids live in squalor today? And you wonder why they are disenfranchised, why they're so disconnected. And we're being told, by the way, and I have to throw this in, and this goes back to Greenspan and these elitist bums, we have to have a $10.10 an hour minimum wage to address wage equality. Has anybody ever taken out a pad and paper and done the math? Has anyone ever taken out an abacus? How does $10.10 an hour equate with wage equality? $10.10 an hour works out to a little bit more than $20,000 a year. I want all of you out there listening to the program to ask yourself a question. How well could you live on $20,000 a year? Even if you had a part-time job and your husband or wife had a similar job. So now we're up to $40,000 a year. How well can you live on $40,000 a year? And we're told the poverty line is $26,000 or $25,000 a year for a family of four. Really? In what third world country? I don't think I could adequately care for a dog in New York City on $20,000 a year. Understand what we're being told. These are all lies. They're all propaganda. It's never been this bad. The falsehoods just keep on coming. The lies just keep on coming. And even when they talk about $15 an hour, which I understand is about to become the minimum wage in California, and some of my conservative friends says, oh, all those jobs are going to go away. No, they're going to hire these people. Companies don't generally hire superfluous people. The government might. Corporations don't hire unnecessary personnel. The only solution the company's going to have will be to raise the price a bit. And you know what? I'm happy to pay a little bit more if it means somebody earns a little more, because the only way we're going to break the cycle of poverty and welfare is when people feel that the bulk of their income isn't coming in a check in the mail, but coming because they go to work. We're trying to change a mindset of people who perhaps don't have a work ethic because they've never had a role model at home in a stable situation who thought that work was the way to go. We have multi-generations of welfare recipients because of where we are as a country today. Then the solution isn't the $10 an hour minimum wage. So, you know, all the lunacy that's going on right now. But if you look at the overall picture of this business with the military and what we plan to do with them, you know, we've got to use our head, folks. We should be treating military service as an honor as well as a responsibility. And it should only be for people that we can trust. And that's the whole problem. The politicians look through the world, or look through the prism on the world, with only one perspective. Everything is the political game. You know, there's an expression that says that when you're a hammer, everything you look at looks like a nail. Everything isn't a nail. Everything isn't about the vote or a contribution. There are real-world consequences to these proposals that they're coming up with. So we keep hearing about putting, you know, illegal aliens in the military. And that's one of the worst things we could possibly do. And when you looked at what we saw with the Iranians back then and the Iranians of today, we have to have integrity to the system. And the biggest problem that we have is that there's a lack of integrity throughout the system. There's no integrity to the political process. None. You have a couple of stalwarts who are out there who are trying their damnedest to do the right thing. One of my heroes in Washington, Jeff Sessions, Louis Gohmert, good guy, Chuck Grassley, my friend Lou Barletta, who I spoke with earlier this week, David Vitter. There are some good guys out there, but most of the people that are out there don't care about Americans. They look at the riots and they talk about poverty. But what are they doing to change the equation? You know, the sanitation crews cleaned up the mess. Buildings were leveled. The rioting is stopped. The TV cameras are pretty much gone. The politicians are gone. What did they leave behind? Did they plant any real seeds in that neighborhood that was destroyed? Of course they didn't. They just went there to use the violence as a photo op, as a backdrop, so they could say, I was there. I landed on that train station. You know, they're playing a board game and they needed to land on the square. So they landed on the square and they got out of their car and they looked for the microphones and the cameras. Remember, if you don't get on TV, it doesn't matter. If a tree falls in the forest, there's no one there to hear it. If there's no camera to record it, you lost your opportunity. This is the game of politics. But what did they do when they got back in their car and went back to their nice house in the suburbs? What changed? Is anybody looking at the root cause of poverty? Is anybody looking at the violence? Is anybody looking at the influx of narcotics into the United States? Because that's where the problems are. That's where the solutions can be found. See, immigration becomes one of two things. It's either a defensive weapon that keeps people who would come here and do harm to us, keeps them away to protect us, or you turn it around and it becomes a weapon being used against us, because if we allow unlimited numbers of workers to enter the United States, if we give identity documents to people who can't verify their identity, if we make a mockery of our laws and convince people around the world that it's okay to violate our laws because there's a reward waiting for them, then instead of becoming a defensive weapon, it becomes an offensive weapon, not against our enemy, but against we the people. Because that's what's happening. You see, we admit more than 1 million lawful immigrants every year. And so we admit more than any other country. We have a legal system, and now you have politicians from both sides of the aisle. I don't care if the guy's name is Rubio. I don't care if the person's name is Rand Paul. I wrote a piece about Paul, two pieces actually, for Progressives for Immigration Reform. I've got an article scheduled to be posted about Hillary. Hillary, who said that Obama didn't go far enough on immigration? Why don't we just declare anybody born on the planet Earth to be a U.S. citizen and send all the Border Patrol agents and all the inspectors at the airports home? How long do you think America can survive that way when there's nobody to stop the criminals and no one to stop the terrorists from coming here, when there's no way to stop cheap labor from coming here? This will be a downward spiral. Instead of bidding up the jobs, people will bid down. You know, imagine going to work and your boss says to you, "Hey, Charlie, you do a great job, but I'm paying you $100,000 a year as a programmer. Mr. Patel from India, he's happy to do your job for $50,000 or $60,000 a year." Now you got a choice. Do you take a massive pay cut or do you quit? And if you quit, who's going to hire you? And yet when you listen to the people on TV, why isn't the economy picking up? Nobody's buying anything. Of course no one's buying anything, you bloody idiots. The money is being sucked out of the middle class pockets. It's being vacuumed out. And so short term, the companies that are saving the money by not paying American wages are happy. But when they wind up with warehouses filled with their crap that no other idiot would buy, I mean, what other country could make money off of the pet rock? Think about that. So you vacuum the wallets dry of American consumers. They wind up going on safety net programs. TV personalities sit there pontificating about these lazy bums who have gotten used to being on welfare. No wonder they don't work. I have to tell you, the disconnect between the so-called journalists, the disconnect between the politicians and the real world is astonishing. They are living in a fantasy world. They're vilifying the victims, and they can't wait for more of the same. What could possibly go wrong? And meanwhile, ISIS is on the move, and you've got the president's press secretary, Ernest. What a name for that guy, Ernest. I just love it. It's like a cartoon character. Well, every time there's a setback, we don't need to be running around with our hair on fire. What did that even mean if you saw him say that? What in the world does that mean? You've got a disaster unfolding. ISIS is advancing and advancing and advancing, and the more they advance, you know, nothing succeeds like success. Nobody wants to be on the losing team. They're not the losing team. They could be. They should be if we had real leadership, if you had a president that said, look, we got to mop it up. So instead, it's we'll do it a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And that little bit, they just had more beheadings in the Middle East today, Christians. They don't talk about Jews being beheaded because I'm going to imagine that the Jews are either all dead that lived there before or were able to get out. But this is ethnic cleansing. This is what we're witnessing. I wondered how the Holocaust could have played out. When my mother told me stories about my family that was decimated during the Second World War, I was named for my grandmother who was killed in Poland. I couldn't understand it. I turn on the news today, folks, and I understand it. If my mother was alive today, she'd be sick to her stomach. This is how the Second World War started. And everyone sat there. And I guess their head didn't catch fire. Maybe it should have. So now you've got Ernest saying, well, every time there's a setback. And the president is saying, well, maybe the strategy's not, I don't know, maybe. Does that sound like the leader of the world's only supposed superpower? Where are our leaders? Where are our leaders? And what about the lies we keep hearing about immigration and about American workers who don't want to do certain jobs and are too stupid to do other jobs? And we're supposed to pick from this collection? Where's the winner in that bunch? Americans are too stupid to do the high-tech jobs and too lazy to do the physically demanding jobs. We're just a bunch of losers. And that's who we're supposed to vote for. You know, it reminded me, and I know that my conservative friends, some of them are still in rapture over Ronald Reagan, but it was Reagan who vilified civil servants. You know, the people that were overpaid and underworked, and my buddies and I were typically working 20 hours a day, and we didn't get overtime for it, folks. We used to get an extra 2 hours a day if we worked the extra 2 hours, but after 2 hours, it was on the arm, and boy, oh boy, if I only worked a 10-hour day, that would have been like a part-time job for most of us. And it upset us. And now we're hearing the same nonsense about the American worker in general. If you look at the charts, if you look at the studies, American workers are the most productive. But nobody wants to say that because then people will say, well, maybe we should be hiring Americans. And besides which, as Wilfred Brimley used to say in those commercials, it's the right thing to do. Because in the long run, it's good for America. And if it's good for America, it's good for American companies, except most American companies aren't American companies at all, except when planting a flag on the shrink wrap of some dreck that they manufactured in some third world country helps to improve sales. Because all these companies give a rat's tail about is sales and money and income and revenue. There's no morality to be found here. No morality. You know, now we're looking at the airbags and how many cars that are basically bombs waiting to blow up. And how long did this company that built those bags resist having to change them? Well, I understand why they resisted it, but I'm sure when they dig through the memos, they're going to find out that they knew they had a problem and hope nobody would find out about it, because it's all about the bottom line. It's all about how much money they can give the shareholders, and more importantly, how much money they can pay their CEOs. We've never seen a level of greed and immorality that we're seeing today. It's both political parties. It's many of our companies, not all. There are some ethical companies. But the point is, there's a reason why morality is important. There's a reason why principles are important. We are so at risk, and nobody wants to acknowledge the fact. It's like having cancer and refusing to accept the diagnosis. America has cancer. Crime, it's unemployment. It's the threat of terrorism. But the politicians don't want to accept the diagnosis. They want to sit there and have the money roll in and enjoy whatever fame they think they have, which is fleeting. You know, if they really want a reality check, go to the federal buildings or go to any place where you see these plaques on the wall, these big brass plaques. Go to some federal building. You know, Lower Manhattan has a building on the Church Street, the post office. I used to have a desk upstairs when I was with ATF. In fact, the window next to my desk gave me a perfect view of the World Trade Center. On 9/11, it wasn't just that a building came down. That building was a major part of my work life, of my own life. I was in the Trade Center several times a week. But if you look at the big brass plaque in the lobby of that post office that was, I think, built in the 20s, look at all those names on the plaque. How many of those names does anybody even know? I believe the name of the building was the Farley Building. I don't even know who Mr. Farley was. He might have been a nice guy. Might have been. Who knows? Who cares? But for the ego of putting their name on a brass plaque, politicians would rather spend money on a new building so they get that plaque than build up the highways. Because there's no ribbon cutting, there's no photo op, and there's no brass plaque. If you really want to fix America's infrastructure, I have a suggestion. Every time they put a new sewer line, every time they rebuild a road or a bridge, have a ribbon cutting. Put up a brass plaque. Then these egomaniacal jackasses would probably give you the money to do the work instead of building new buildings that we don't need. It's all about ego. When I was a kid, I thought that people that became adults woke up one morning and had been infused with brilliance, with knowledge, with understanding, with wisdom. No, no such luck. I'm old enough to know better. When we grow up, we just get older, but not necessarily any smarter. Instead of leaders, we have children wearing suits. That's what America has become, country of people wearing suits. But they haven't grown up, not emotionally, not intellectually, certainly not morally. And we're paying a hell of a price for this. We're being told that ISIS is on the move. They want to come here and kill us. There's a debate raging tonight about the Patriot Act. And yet, we can argue about the value of the collection of all that data, who's calling who, that sort of thing. I have mixed feelings on both sides of this issue. But how could anybody argue that allowing millions of people into your country without being able to determine who in the world they are in the first place is dangerous? It's a bad idea. It's certainly not helpful. How brilliant do you need to be to figure it out? I'd like to know if those same politicians go to sleep with their doors wide open. It's remarkable that Chuck Schumer was jumping up and down, that I've mentioned it before, I have to mention it tonight, ranting and raving about people trespassing on the World Trade Center, the Brooklyn Bridge, the Manhattan Bridge, and he said there ought to be a federal law that if you trespass on a landmark anywhere in America, you should be facing 5 years in prison. All right, maybe there's some sense to that. He said the reason people trespass in New York is that the most they face is a year in jail, and they only get about 3 months if they get anything, so that's not enough of a deterrent. He said when you want to stop people from doing something that's illegal, you have to make the punishment strong enough that you convince people to stop doing it. Chuck Schumer is one of the eight gangsters who wants to give millions of people identity documents and citizenship for running our border. Now, what does that tell you? It tells me that Chuck wants the status quo to continue. He wants the flood of humanity across our borders, because if he didn't, then he would stand there and make the same speech about people violating our immigration laws. They're coming because there's no downside. They're coming because the punishment isn't severe enough. Punishment? He wants to reward that behavior. So the guy that wants to put people in jail for 5 years for climbing a cable on a bridge to take a fancy picture of the skyline or maybe of the Statue of Liberty, not a smart thing to do, but does it sound like a 5-year felony to you? But Chuck Schumer thinks that should be a 5-year crime. But running our borders, he wants to reward people. See, Schumer understands crime and punishment. He understands deterrence. So really what he wants to do is find a way to dismantle America's borders permanently. Because with the argument that we can't deport 11 million, and the number is probably 30 million, it's remarkable that that number hasn't budged. And how long has this been going on? You know, for years it's been 11 million, and they keep on coming, but the number doesn't go up. But really, if the argument is that there are too many people to deport, then the more who come here, the stronger that argument would become in their mind, if they have a mind. So what does that really mean? What's the end game? See, the end game isn't even only this issue of amnesty. The end game is what he wants to do with America's borders at the end of the day. Why do they tell you that it's only about the Mexican border? Because they don't want to talk about the other ways aliens could come here, because then you might try to demand that those whole situation be resolved. When I debated this guy on J.D. Hayworth's program, Aguilar, and I said we need many more agents for Interior Enforcement, he kept saying we need many more people to secure the border. He was desperate to keep me from talking about Interior Enforcement, which really is the key, because Interior Enforcement is at the heart of everything that's wrong with the immigration system. People will eventually get past the Border Patrol. Their goal is not, as I wrote in one of my recent articles, they don't come like Neil Armstrong, you know, set foot on our side of the border, grab a couple rocks, plant a flag, and leave. They're coming to head for the rest of the country. That's where Interior Enforcement comes in. When people lie on applications for citizenship, that's where Interior Enforcement comes in, because then you go after the fraud. When people commit felonies, get arrested by the police, and they're aliens, that's where Interior Enforcement comes in, because then the mission is to identify them and make certain when they get out of jail, they're deported. That's Interior Enforcement. So if you really had a strong Interior Enforcement program, then you could really start to talk about strategies to solve the immigration problem. They don't want the problem solved. They want to paper over it so it looks as though it's solved while the status quo continues. Understand the long-term game. The long-term game is to never, ever get a handle on the problem. Because the guy that understands crime and punishment who then says that if you commit violations against the country, because really, trespassing is trespassing. People that run the border, at the very least, are trespassing. Then why doesn't he apply that reason to the trespassers? Obviously, the objective here is to keep them coming. And how many members of Congress do you think are immigration lawyers? They are. Have you ever seen a lawyer turn away clients? You know what the term ambulance chaser is? You know, there's a car accident. Oh, my God, I'm going to give him my card. I remember one day we witnessed a car accident in downtown Brooklyn. I was with my senior partner, Robert Hansen Bjorn. Bob passed away many years ago, but he was the guy I was first assigned to when I came out of the academy. And I will never forget it. We saw an accident. Some pedestrian got hit, and it was right across the street from Brooklyn Law School in downtown Brooklyn. And while we stood there, I mean, thank God I can laugh because the person wasn't badly hurt. It looked like maybe she sprained her leg or something. We waited for the ambulance. But while we waited with her, trying to do the right thing, we must have had a dozen lawyers drop business cards in her lap. I kid you not. Here's my card. Here's my card. And I'm looking at these people. I'm like, are you kidding me? The woman's sitting on the ground, and these people were literally walking by and dropping business cards in her lap. You wonder why people dislike lawyers? Do you really wonder? So you have all these lawyers in Congress who practice immigration law or their friends practice immigration law. They look at that flood of humanity. You know what they see? Clients. Clients. I'd love somebody to compile a list so we know which of the members of the United States Congress are practicing immigration attorneys or at the very least have an affiliation with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. That's what I'd like to know, because everyone is concerned purely about their own selfish needs. Never mind that we destroy the country. Never mind that we've got a flood of narcotics coming into the United States. And you know who the most likely victims are? The members of the same ethnic immigrant communities, whether it's the Russian community, the Asian community, the African community, the Latino community, not just about Latinos. But they have to do it that way so that they can play war. You know, we're going to have the Latinos against the whites, the blacks against the whites. You know, this is what the politicians are doing. It's called divide and conquer. And how many Americans are dopey enough to fall for that ploy? How many Americans are that stupid? Wake up, everybody. This is a game, and the game is the game of winning everything, and that's what these folks are in for. There's nothing reasonable about what's happening. There's nothing logical, sensible, or defensible about what's going on. It's just a matter of calling these people out. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that you listen to my program. But just listening to my program will accomplish nothing if you don't take the information that I hope you find useful and build an argument against the politicians. Go to the town hall meetings and tape them. You've got a phone that takes video. In the old day, taping was difficult. They might not allow a camera in. They can't tell you to leave your phone away, take your phone out. So when they say stupid things, when you question them, videotape it. Have your friends go with you. Videotape it on your phone. Put it up on YouTube. They did that when Gutierrez held a town hall meeting in California and insisted that the meeting was going to be held only in Spanish. The pandering is outrageous. George Bush's brother, Jeb Bush, who was looking for love in all the wrong places, said running the border was an act of love, actually is campaigning in the Spanish language in the appropriate neighborhoods. I mean, if you want to talk about pandering, that's pandering. This is America. My parents would have been offended. My mother came to this country as a 14-year-old girl speaking Yiddish and Polish only, no English. She taught herself English. She had a fourth-grade education, became the chief buyer for one of the few dress companies that were very successful during the Depression. Her boss was one of Roosevelt's dollar-a-year men, and he often credited my mom with much of his success. And she was in her 20s with a fourth-grade education. But she taught herself English. My dad's parents came from Russia, Romania, turn of the last century. First order of business was learning English. They would have been insulted. They would have said, these people are playing me for a fool coming in here speaking in Yiddish or speaking in Russian or speaking in Polish. It would have been an insult to my parents. So So what we're really saying to people is we stand for nothing except we'll do anything you want as long as you vote for me or give me money. How do you spell prostitution? America is yearning for leaders. Anybody who could do stuff like that is not a leader. Not a leader. A leader is someone you want to get behind. You don't want a behind for a leader. These people are behinds. What do they stand for? Votes. That's what they stand for. Why don't someone ask them, what do you stand for besides votes and money? Votes and money. And, of course, the lame answer is, well, if I don't get the votes, I don't get elected, I can't do anything. Okay, and what do you want to do now that you've been elected?
Oh, I got an election coming up.
Yeah, there you go. So what happened to all your dreams and plans and reasons for voting? Do you understand the way the game is being played here? They come into power saying, I have an agenda of helping America. And as soon as they get there, they grab them and they say, hey, listen, you want to keep your job? It's like dealing with the mob. They got a guy whose position is called the whip. If that doesn't sound like a Tony Soprano enforcer, folks, I don't know what does. It was astonishing to me that Osama bin Laden had the 9/11 Commission report in his little hideout. He had an application for citizenship in his hideout. And I'm willing to bet that half the members of Congress not only don't read bills, they've probably never even picked up the 9/11 Commission report. Why don't you ask your elected congressman that question the next time? Maybe I'm going too far when I say ask them why their legislation runs opposite the 9/11 Commission report. Maybe the better question to ask these idiots is, have you ever read the report? I mean, all of it, besides the cover, besides looking at the picture on the cover. Have you ever read the 9/11 Commission report? Maybe, folks, that should be the question we should ask them. How's that for a novel thought? You know, it's astonishing that what we have for leadership today is a lack of leadership. The sucking sound of the vacuum is beyond belief. We have no leadership, no moral compass. We have a case here of six Chinese, they were residents of the United States, charged with stealing U.S. mobile phone technology. We talked about that before in addition to that other professor. So there's seven of these people now involved with it. I mean, this is absolutely remarkable. And it's not the first time. It's constant. It's constant. Here's what this article says about these six. The six are charged with stealing thin film bulk acoustic resonator technology used in mobile phones from two U.S. companies, according to DOJ press release. And they refer to it by the initials, that technology, FBAR technology, filters incoming and outgoing wireless signals so that a mobile phone only receives and transmits the specific communications intended by the user. In addition to consumer applications, FBAR is used in several military and communication technologies. So what does that tell you? This has military applications. This is espionage. And we are admitting these folks through the front door. But this is all about Mexico and dishwashers, isn't it? I mean, this is the lunacy that we're facing. This is exactly the lunacy that we're facing. I have an article, by the way, that's coming out, Front Page Magazine, probably in the next day or two, about the refugee crisis. There's now a push on to settle 50,000 Syrian refugees in Detroit. In Detroit. And you know, you had the governor of Detroit previously. I mean, this guy is absolutely, in my judgment, a Nimrod, because Rick Snyder makes this point that I could not believe. Last year, he wanted to bring in all sorts of foreign workers, and it was just absolutely amazing. And here's here's a quote about Rick Snyder. You have to listen to this. The status quo is dumb, and not fixing it for political reasons would be even dumber. To be blunt, we have a dumb system, he said during remarks on immigration, using a phrase that he'd repeat a few times. Why would we build the dumb system we have today to say we don't want you here? And what was the dumb system? The fact that we keep foreign workers out who compete with Americans. and he kept using the word dumb. He needed to look in the mirror. This guy flunks the wiggle test. You know, stick your left finger in your left ear, your right finger in your right ear, you wiggle your fingertips. If they touch, you flunk. Snyder flunks. I mean, look, the nonsense is that he wants to bring in 50,000 high-tech workers. He's got a city with no jobs, no buildings, and people leaving. So what in the world is he trying to do? Here's another quote. Snyder praised the Senate's bipartisan immigration efforts last year. He said that he continued to argue that reform would be beneficial for the United States. He spoke Thursday, and this is a while back, in Detroit about the need for immigration reform, promising to request 50,000 visas over the next 5 years for highly skilled immigrants who would move to the city. In that speech, he similarly called the system dumb, including the failure to give work visas to people who receive college degrees in the U.S. We have a federal program that tells them to get out, he said. How dumb is that? I mean, this is astonishing. This is astonishing. Why in the world isn't he talking about making certain that those kids living in poverty get a college education so they can become middle-class Americans? And here's the best one. Governor Rick Snyder of Michigan, a Republican, has already laid the groundwork. In January 2014, he called for an infusion of 50,000 immigrants as part of a program to revitalize Detroit and signed an executive order creating the Michigan's Office for New Americans. What in the world is a new American? And what was wrong with the old Americans? You know, the ones who voted for him. New Americans. Rick Snyder. You want to talk about dumb, Ricky baby, look in the mirror. You qualify. I mean, this is outrageous. To create the Michigan Office for New Americans, it leaves me stupefied. And I'm sure you understand why. What in the world are these people thinking? What in the world could they possibly have in their mind that they think that this makes sense, that this would somehow be good for America or Americans? Totally crazy. Totally crazy. So, you know, you look at all of this and you say to yourself, how in the world do we get smart people to finally run for office, people who have a moral compass? Because what we're dealing with right now is sheer madness, folks. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Totally crazy. I want to read a quote to you before I wrap up, and this is an important quote. Think about this. When the situation was manageable, it was neglected. And now that it is thoroughly out of hand, we apply too late the remedies which might have effected a cure. There is nothing new in the story. It is as old as the Sibylline books. It falls into that long, dismal catalog of the fruitlessness of experience and the confirmed unteachability of mankind. Want of foresight, unwillingness to act when action would be simple and effective, lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong. These are the features which constitute the endless repetition of history. That quote was spoken by none other than Winston Churchill, May 2nd, 1935, before the British House of Commons, when he was considering the gathering storm clouds of the Second World War on the horizon. How apt are those words today? George Bernard Shaw had a much simpler way of saying it. We learn from history that we learn nothing from history. A little common sense would go a long way. A little morality would go a long way. Involvement by our fellow Americans would go a longer way. And that's what I'm asking all of you to do. You know, I always like to say at the end of my programs, at the end of my commentaries, that democracy is not a spectator sport. Please, folks, get involved. You can't be a good parent if you're not concerned about the future of your country, because with it, we're talking about the future of your children and their children. We're in a mess, and I'm underwhelmed by what I'm hearing from the candidates so far. I know Ben Carson hasn't spoken much about immigration. Donald Trump hasn't. Carly Fiorina hasn't. But all the others have. And what we're hearing is disastrous. disastrous. There is no way that we can vote for somebody who wants comprehensive reform, or they could call it whatever they want, but it's those elements of the program that disturb me, not the name, arose by any other name, you know. We need to put Americans first. That's what's necessary. American citizens, not American companies, American citizens. That's who needs to be put into first place. That's not going to happen when you have a Michigan governor who talks about creating an office for new Americans. We are obviously the throwaways, the disposables. This is so outrageous, I don't even know where to go with it. And the fact that he could do it, and God only knows, maybe get reelected, blows my mind. How in the world could any rational person elect or vote for a governor who creates an office for new Americans? I think the old Americans are suffering enough, don't you? Why don't we take care of them first? Nobody in their right mind would give money to charity if they couldn't feed their own children. And if child welfare agencies became aware of a family giving money to charity while sending their children to bed hungry at night, would probably seek to have those kids removed from the home that those kids were living in. Americans are going without an awful lot. Mostly, they're going without a future in their own country. And we have ourselves to blame. My dad told me that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. How in the world we have become a nation of fools that are willing to accept such individuals in these important elected positions upon which the safety and survival of our nation and our citizens rest is beyond me. We have ourselves to blame. That's why I do this program. On 9/11, when those ashes landed on my home, when I saw my neighbors out sitting on the sidewalk and screaming and crying, they didn't know where their wives, their husbands, their children, their parents, their best friends were. I felt that I needed to step up and be heard. Because I had a unique perspective, having spent so many years working for the old INS, part of the drug task force, arresting terrorists. It was an education to go to work every day. I learned those lessons, and now I'm trying to pass those lessons along to you. I'm trying to pass those lessons along to people who pretend to represent us. It's Memorial Day. We're supposed to honor, and indeed we must honor, those valiant Americans who've given their lives in defense of our country, in our defense. But more than a white sale, or more than a barbecue, or more than a picnic, should be a time for us to contemplate where we are going and whether we're going down the right path. Let's not make those incredible sacrifices amount to nothing, because that's what we're doing. Those men and women who died for a cause. The least we can do is honor their memories, their incredible valor, by picking up the cause and making our elected representatives representative of all of us, Americans. Americans first. I don't care about left or right. This is about right or wrong. It's always a privilege joining you at the end of the week. Please, I'd like very much for you to all go to my websites, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, Front Page Magazine, Progressives for Immigration Reform. And come the fall, we've got a new edition coming out, and I'm writing the lead story in this quarterly publication known as The Social Contract. I hope you find the information helpful, and if you do, please share it with as many friends and neighbors as you can. What I'm trying to do is create what I've come to call my bucket brigade of truth. I certainly need your help. Remember, folks, democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a wonderful weekend. And I look forward to seeing you again next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.